Hello, Internet. Welcome to the Making Geeks podcast. We are the podcast for makers, dads, and geeks, and this is episode 116. We have a great show for you right ahead of us, and we have our co-host with us here today with Mr. Josh Price, Mr. Wes Swain, Mr. Mark. Wait, nope, Mark's not here tonight. Filling in, though, we have Donovan from the Beardless Man. Actually, we'll be talking about that, won't we? Since we're going to transition in that. Formerly of the Beardless Man YouTube channel here with us, filling in. And so, Donovan, how you doing?
I'm fantastic. I'm busy. I'm so busy.
Well, thanks for fitting us in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we know it was late notice.
Yeah.
After I got the time zone right, I was good. I was good.
Usually we're dealing with, like, you know, the coastal time zones, you know, east and west. We don't hit that central very often. We have to worry about that.
I know. I sometimes forget that I live literally in the middle of nowhere and that nobody lives by me. So I know I should stop assuming that people are in the same time zone that I am.
I lived in that one little sliver of Florida that's in central time. So it was always weird going to Eastern time. Like, everything is so late. Like, all our TV shows come on earlier in the regular time.
Yeah.
So what you guys been up to this week?
Phyllis been busy. Ever since we got back from Maker Faire, we've been trying to catch up. And it seems like we can't get ahead. But trying to put out videos, trying to make cool things, and stuff keeps messing up. Tried to pour a batch of silicone the other day, kind of similar to Wes, your problem last time we spoke. Tried to pour epoxy one time, and the epoxy was bad. Tried to pour a batch of silicone, and the silicone was old. So I spent a lot of money on a bunch of stuff just to find out, as you're pouring it, that it's not going to work. So that sets back time. It sets back, and then I got to order another batch, and that takes time. And so it's not complaining, but, like, working with chemicals and oils and things like that, it's a crapshoot, especially when your whole project is kind of based on it.
That is why I am terrified of finishing up this table. It's because, yeah, I've never done anything like that before. I don't want to screw it up, because if I screw it up, I've screwed up the whole table.
What's your table comprised of, for those who are not aware?
So what it is, it's an old baker's table that I was given by somebody that's like, hey, why don't you just refinish this and sell it? And I don't currently have a workbench, and so I looked at this table and I'm like, well, I could refinish it and make it my new workbench, because it's a good size and it's good height, and I figured it would work well. And so I put a poll out on Instagram saying, hey, there's these two ideas for a Zelda table I have. Which one do you guys think I should do? And one was Link shooting an arrow at one of the ancient spider things. I can't remember their
names.
Guardians. And the other one was some Zelda art with Link silhouetted around a Sheikah character, and Zelda's in the... You'd have to see it to understand what it is. But everybody voted for that one, which I was fine with. I was like, okay. But that one, I wanted to do glow-in-the-dark epoxy. And so I carved 30 glyph characters around the outside of the table that are going to be filled with glow-in-the-dark epoxy. And then on the inside of the table, I'm doing scroll saw art with pine, maple, cedar, and walnut, of the different layers of the pictures. And inside each of those layers, there's going to be glow-in-the-dark epoxy and whatnot. So I'm finishing up all of the scroll saw art for the middle, because I got all of the characters on the outside done. So once everything's together, the last part is going to be the glow-in-the-dark epoxy. And so I've got the glow-in-the-dark pigment. I've got some dollar store paint that I'm going to grind up to make the blue pigment for the epoxy. And then Remarkable Woodworks up in Canada is sending me some of his extra epoxy. So once I get that, I'm going to mix it all together. And if I don't screw it up too bad, I'll have a new workbench.
You know, I really wish you'd set the bar higher for your projects.
Yeah.
I don't think you're doing enough.
I want to get this one done so badly so I can like move on to something else, because I have all of these projects in the shoot, and especially now that it's Halloween, I've got three Halloween projects that I really want to do. One that I'm really excited about that involves tattooing. But I don't have any tattoos, but I partnered with a tattoo artist to try
Hopefully
something.
It wasn't Beardless Man themed.
No.
Okay.
Is it wasn't. DIY tattoo?
No. Well, I could probably actually tell you. It's I'm getting a pair of – I want a pair of work boots, like shop boots, like good leather. And so I – but I wanted them to be unique and different. And so I found a tattoo artist who is going to take my boots and tattoo the Marauders map from Harry Potter the boots. So – and that'll be a project video, is showing the process of tattooing shoes, because that's not something you see. So I thought it'd be unique and interesting.
That would be interesting, seeing how the ink spreads in the leather.
Because I mean, leather is skin,
right?
And it makes sense. So.
And it should. I mean, other than they're a pair of boots, like it's dead skin, so you're. Your white blood cells don't fight the ink, so it would, if they weren't work boots, it would like stay there longer than a traditional tattoo that fades over time because your body tries to eat it.
That is the idea.
Is there a precedent for this?
What do you mean a precedent?
Is this a thing that people have done? Like, I'd never heard of that. Or is it like a known thing that you, if I Google it, will I see people doing that? Is it popular?
There is like a tattoo artist in New York, I think it is, that wrote an article a long time ago about making bespoke shoes that have tattooed like old 1950s designs on the outside and stuff like that. And I was like, oh, that would be cool. Huh. And so I took that idea and I was like, well, you know, Halloween's coming up, Harry Potter. Because originally I was going to do the map of Hyrule, since a lot of my projects lately have been Zelda themed. But with Halloween coming up, I'm like, hey, this would be a perfect time. The Marauders map is fantastic. Mm-hmm. And I think it'd look cool on the shoes, on the heel of one doing, you know, I solemnly swear I'm up to no good, on the heel of the other, mischief managed, and then, you know, wrapped around Marauders map for the rest of the shoe.
That's a cool idea. Mm-hmm. That's our next project video that I like to make stuff.
Cool.
We're pillaging it. I keep it now.
You'll probably get it done before I will. So,
hey, B.U.S., what are you up to?
I've been dealing with the ramifications of my eBay purchase that I mentioned last week. I got the NES Deluxe set with Rob the Robot on eBay. I ordered it last week. It arrived, I forget what day, Saturday, I think. And I get it all, you know, set out on the table. I'm all excited, taking pictures, Instagramming, put the batteries in. And I've never had a Rob robot before, so I don't really know what it was supposed to do with the batteries. So I watched a video. I'm like, and after you turn it on, he's supposed to go through this little animation sequence, like a power-up sequence of him moving his arms and rotating. I throw the batteries in, hit power, and the gears, you can hear them grinding, and he moves like a couple millimeters, and that's it. Like, his arms kind of, and you just hear stuff trying to do things, and nothing happens. I'm like, oh, really? Okay, so I check some other accessories. I check this. There's a spinner, which I'm holding up to the camera. It's like this little, basically there's a little motor in here. And one of the accessories for Rob, for those who are watching on the live stream, there's a bunch of gyroscopes that he comes with, and he puts this in the puts a gyroscope in the spinner base, and it has a motor that spins the gyro up to speed, and then he uses his hands and picks it up while it's spinning and sets it on basically buttons to hold buttons down on the NES controller. Very weird. But I put batteries in the spinner and it didn't work either. The motor didn't spin up. So that's, I haven't resolved that yet. But I spent the last couple days researching, and I did a Twitch stream of me attempting a repair on Rob, and I was successful. So he came out of surgery, and he rotates and animates, and it's like he was never broken, so that's good. So
What was the problem that had to be fixed?
So there's a couple gearboxes inside that have a ton of gears, and it's really, it looks like it's over-engineered, but I'm sure it's just the right amount of engineering for Nintendo, but it just looks very daunting. There's tons, it's probably like 10 gears per set or whatever. And there's some components in there that I guess originally they were glued together, from what I understand, and over time that glue has come apart. And so pieces that are supposed to be attached to each other along this axle now freely spin, so there's no resistance and no transfer of energy to the next parts down the line. And so all you have to do is put super glue in like two different spots. There's two different gearboxes. You put super glue in one for the arms to go up and down, and then another gearbox for him to rotate his arms. Did that, and before the end of the stream, I had it all together again and working. That's all it was.
Cool.
That's good news.
Yeah.
Simple.
And I ended up I tested the NES as well, and that didn't work. So every component that was powered by electricity did not function at all properly. So I emailed the seller, and luckily she was very apologetic and worked with me. And I ended up getting probably 2/3 of the total cost back.
Oh, wow.
I'm like, I can send it all to you. I have no problem doing that. And that's what she offered, you know, to do, which is awesome. And I'm like, hey, I found some other broken parts of this equivalent set just as is on eBay. Are you willing to, you know, refund the difference and let me basically buy it for that value? And she's like, yeah, basically put up with this longer than most people would. Most people just ship it back and just forget about it, but you're working with me, and I wasn't trying to get a swindle a deal or anything, just make it mutually beneficial with the situation that we had handed to us. And so, yeah, she ended up refunding a good chunk of it. And I ended up repairing Rob so far, and the NES I'm still working on, and so hopefully by the end of the next couple weeks I'll have everything together. And maybe that could be like a new series or something, like on a Twitch night, or maybe a new video series of mine, like Retro Repair Clinic or something. I don't know. I've been doing that a lot lately, so maybe that's a little thing.
That Game Medic that Sean mentioned was kind of a cool idea.
Watch
it. Sean, what about you, buddy?
I've been working little by little on a two-part mold out of Plaster Paris that I'm casting a Boba Fett head from like a pop figure. And I got the mold working right now. I had to redo the second part of the mold. Got it mixed right. It worked. It looks pretty good. And I'm going to be trying to cast concrete in it. And I'll probably be trying to do that this weekend. But I've been getting home late every day this week, so I haven't been able to make any progress on that. On Instagram, though, I've been doing some, not really live paintings, but like painting updates from like some portrait painting that I've been trying that I've never been very good at, but been making some improvements and just having fun on that end, since a big part of my day involves more of the traditional art side now.
Yeah, it's been fun following along on your Instagram stories, seeing all the attempts of, I guess the animations are old animations that you've done. Is that right?
No, it's little test stuff I'm doing, because the software that I'm using, that I'm teaching, I've never really used before. I mean, I know the process, because the process of animation doesn't change, but I haven't used the software before. So I'm doing these little animation tests to make sure I can do the functions that I'm going to be teaching next for the students, is really what it comes down to. You know, simple drawings and rigging the drawings and Toon Boom and just little stuff like that. I think that's what you're referring to, right?
Maybe it was somebody else Wes, were you?
Yeah.
Oh, it was Wes.
I was inspired by his revisiting of animation stuff, so I dug out an old animation of a guy lifting a big boulder onto a catapult from like 10 years ago that I made. People seem to enjoy it, so maybe I'll find some more.
Have you, Josh?
This will be released on, Saturday?
Yes.
What day is it now?
Thursday. The table one already came out today, if that's the one you're worried about talking about.
Modular table?
Yeah, the table's nice. I was talking about the thing that I'm going to be on camera for.
Oh, yeah, they'll be next Monday, right?
Yeah, so...
You were very cryptic about that on Instagram. and didn't really say what it was you were doing.
Yeah, so I am. I recorded a bits video, and it's all me. And I don't know how I feel about that.
I'm not. What do you mean?
Not what you call a handsome man.
Oh yeah.
This was the one that made it into the
video. Forby's really good with editing, right?
Oh, I had to edit it, which was worse.
Oh, dang it.
And to look at my ugly self. So usually when we do those videos, like, they're kind of scripted. We have an outline. So it's rough script. And I'm behind the camera kind of directing and producing, because a lot of times I do the outlines. So I'm like, no, say it like this, or say it like this way is better. And, you know, it's not easy because you're trying to speak from script. And you're also trying to flow like a conversation. And when I had to do it, it was freaking terrible. Like, I was like, holy crap, how did I make YouTube videos before? I was like, oh, I didn't care. Like, now I kind of care. And this is way harder when you kind of care. But, and it's, okay, it's super silly. But you guys have seen me in person and seen me on the podcast. And, like, I wear my hat a lot, more than I don't wear my hat. So the first time I did this, because this is the second iteration of me doing this bits video. The first one I just deleted because it was garbage. And so I did it all over again. But the first one, I was not wearing my hat. And so I was like watching the footage and I was like, this is terrible. All across the board, this is terrible. And then Bob's like, well, we can just reshoot it if you don't like it. You know, we can do it again. I'm like, yeah, but I have to wear my hat. He's like, I don't know if that's a good idea. It might be distracting. I'm like, I don't care. I'm going to put my hat on. So it's amazing the amount of confidence that I get from wearing a hat. And I don't know why. I put it on and it was like I put on my superhero costume because I put a hat on. It's so much better. I don't get it.
Now that you say that, I don't know if I've seen you without a hat, or Wes for that matter.
I mean, it's okay. There. I have hair. I'm not balding or anything. It's just I
don't know. You're blowing my mind, man.
Yes, I am.
I feel like, I don't know. It's super weird. Like, even when we first started recording the podcast, mm-hmm. when we were doing the video, I'm like, hold on, guys. I have to go get my hat.
It's true. You did do that.
It's super dumb.
I think we all did that the first time.
Yeah, I don't get it. But, so yeah, I recorded a bits video. I'm going to be on the TV. So,
you know, this was inevitable.
Something that we talked about a long time ago, but.
Yeah, but.
Say a long time ago. I've been doing this for a year.
People keep asking in the on the Twitch streams of, you know, when they're going to see you in a video.
Monday.
Because the way the channel's growing and everything else, I knew that it would happen eventually, even though you weren't too excited about it when we talked about it a while ago. It's been
honestly,
months.
I'm indifferent about it. That made me realize that I really like doing all the other stuff rather than having to be on camera. Because especially with an audience that large, like, people are very quick to nitpick. And I'm wondering if my sensitive boy nature is going to be able to take people actually, like, responding to me doing things. Part of me doesn't care, but part of me cares way more than I want them, than I should. But,
well, you are going to get all those, that's not Bob, comments.
Bob. I have really, really quippy comebacks to like, who's this guy?
Well, you know that you don't even need that, though. I mean, look at what happened with the King of Random.
Well, that I think that's why whenever I got hired, like, people, he didn't want me on camera at all, and he was very adamant about that. I'm like, good, because I don't really want to be on camera, as he didn't want to come across that he was giving up or giving the channel over to somebody else or anything like that. But,
well, what brought on the change, or just something different, or was it specific to the item you're bitsing? Is it that you have more experience in it?
Yeah. We talked about trying to diversify, like, the bits videos to maybe include other people in the future who may be more, may have more expertise in a given situation, rather than Bob trying to just speak about something he may not have a lot of experience in. And he's like, but I don't want to just randomly bring somebody else on. It would seem too abrupt. I'm like, well, people kind of know me And then we were talking about the topic that's going to be in the video. I'm like, well, I know how to do that better than you do. So I just did it. So, yeah, it was a little different. So
definitely it sounds like a little bit of an adjustment to the brand where it's only been one face with the brand. But yeah. Now you're a little bit more attached, as I'm sheepishly trying to segue into our topic for tonight.
Well, it was good because, I mean, Donovan and I had a conversation about his brand because Donovan raised this question about branding and with you changing your brand. Oh, and congratulations on your new baby, by the way.
Yes.
Thank you. She is fantastic.
But I'm in the fortunate, I guess, place where I now belong to a really good brand, whereas my personal brand sucks. So I can talk about branding from these are the decisions that you can get kind of caught in, and to these are way better decisions and the positive response you can get from having a good at brand versus having to explain yourself all the time to strangers with a bad brand. So what were the problems that you were facing with your own brand? And then I guess we can kind of chime in.
The one thing about my brand is the fact that when I started The Beardless Man, it was for something that was going to be completely different than what I ended up doing with it. The whole geek dad DIY that I do now is not what I initially was going to do. And so the brand was to go down this first road, but then I ended up completely changing course and going down this other road. But the brand stayed because I thought it was unique. I really liked the logo that I came up with. It was memorable, like it was easy to remember. And so I thought it would just work. It would fit. I would roll with it. And I did. But I mean, I did get comments, over the past year, people talking about my brand, nothing bad or anything like that. Just kind of confused as to why, you know, do you have a beard? Do you not have a beard? Do you sell razors? Like all that kind of stuff. But it kind of came to a head at Maker Faire when I had my booth set up at Maker Faire, and, this representative from Make, I guess like the national agency, whatever, she came over to interview me. To potentially be in Make magazine. And she kept asking me, it's like, so the Beardless Man, it's like, what is it that you actually do? And I explain like the kind of things that I build and doing YouTube videos. And like, she's like, okay, but what does the Beardless Man actually do? And I was like, oh no, oh my gosh. And I could tell what she was getting at is the fact that my name, my brand doesn't reflect what it is that I do. Like, you can't look at the Beardless Man and so say, oh, that's probably a guy that, you know, makes stuff, or that's a guy that woodworks, or that's a guy that, you know, does YouTube videos. You don't get any of that. All you get is, you know, the Beardless Man and my logo, and the initial impression that most everybody gets is that I'm a shave company. You know, I sell razors, you know, to help people be a beardless man, that kind of thing.
You know, when I first saw your brand, I never actually had that consideration, but maybe it's because of already being part of the DIY community and knowing mm-hmm. that almost everybody has a beard. It made sense to me. it made sense to me from that standpoint, but from outside looking in, I could see where that would be problematic.
Mm-hmm. And recently I decided to do a complete tonal shift with my videos because I'm not that what I'm doing right now just isn't working. And I've come to an impasse where I need to make this venture viable or I need to give it up, basically. We had our third, my wife doesn't work anymore. And my day job just isn't cutting it for everything that we need now with, you know, three kids and a house. And, we just got a van because now we have three kids and all this other kind of stuff. And so, I need to make this work or I need to like get a second job basically, which means giving up, you know, YouTube and Instagram and all that kind of stuff, which I really don't want to do because of everything that led me to this point and coming into this community. I'm not ready to give it up. So I want to fight for it. And so I decided to completely change the tonal shift of my videos and try something way out of the ordinary. And with that decision being made, I figured it was a good time to also rebrand myself so the people could see my new name or my new brand and know or have an idea of what it is that I do. So Monday, I registered my new company. I changed my name. I bought a domain, all that kind of stuff, and taking that next step forward.
With the new name?
Oh, Once Upon a Workbench. I used to work for Disney. I was an animation intern. I used to be really into drawing and animation and stuff like that. And, you know, then I used to be in the film industry. I have all this, you know, experience. And I kind of felt I had all of this particular experience that I wasn't applying with the videos that I'm making because, quite frankly, I'm trying to be like Bob. You know, I'm trying to make videos like he does. I'm trying to, like, that kind of stuff. Instead of trying to do what I do, trying to be like myself.
We've all made that mistake. That's how a lot of us got started.
I know. I mean, which isn't a bad thing. Trying to emulate Bob, because he is really good at what he does, regardless of the fact that most people that I ask the question to, whether they like tutorial videos or whether they like watch me work videos, like 93% of them was like, I like watching me work videos and I don't like tutorial videos. But Bob does tutorial videos and holy cow, like everybody loves his stuff. And so, you know, I spent 2017 trying to be like Bob, basically. And now I just made the decision to just try and take my experience and my particular set of skills and try and be my own thing.
So. Awesome. Mm-hmm. Well, Bob flat out makes tutorial videos.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a both. So, I mean, we show people what we're making and then we tell them how we're making it. So it's a weird kind of mix where we don't directly say, like, you need to make this cut. It's not that Bob Vila, but it's, I'm doing this with the implication that people can go and do it themselves. So mm-hmm. it's a weird dance on that line.
And I mean, Bob has specifically said in the past that, like, he doesn't expect anyone to ever make the stuff that he makes videos about. He just does it because, like, he makes stuff because he likes it. He said it in the podcast. I don't know if that's still his philosophy. But I was making tutorial videos specifically of trying to get people to say, hey, build this. Like, do this. This is every step. Why don't you go and build this? Rather than doing, like, the Jimmy Duresta thing where you just show somebody the process to try and help inspire them to go make something rather than trying to teach them how to make something.
So on our marker board, we have written, you are capable of more than you think you are. And so of everything that we do, it needs to hit back to that point. Like, are we showing people that by making an R2-D2, like, why are we making that? Well, because it's cool. It's like, well, are we demystifying a process? Like, are we showing people that you can make this thing and this is how you can do it? And it's to empower people to go and do stuff on their own by, he talks about the black box, like showing there's no secrets. Like, you can do everything that I am doing. If you really think it's that awesome, then great. You can now, after watching this, with all the resources that we give you in links, like, go do it yourself. So we have on that board, and we all always point back to, like, are we hitting that, is you are capable of more than you think you are. So if that's any kind of guiding light, then there's a little bit of behind-the-scenes motivation.
So, Donna, let me ask you a question really quick, because I think that we all have to answer this at some point. You have a lot of talent. You have some very specific skills that a lot of other people don't have. Why DIY?
Why DIY? I did this because when I was in the film industry, I really, really loved what I was doing. I loved the creative process. I loved, like, making something out of nothing, creating characters, like making films, all that kind of stuff. But the industry is so cutthroat that, like, you have to invest so much time and so much energy and so much effort to get a leg up, especially being here in the middle of nowhere, which has its benefits, but it also, you know, has its downfalls. And at the end of 2016, the production company that I was a part of, we started the process of putting together a feature film, a Western, And we were going through, you know, storyboarding, character development, revisions of script writing and all this other kind of stuff, and scheduling for the next, you know, year and a half to try and do this feature film. And looking at the scheduling and looking at the blocking and everything that was going to go into making this movie, I realized that, like, if I was to do this, because it was my dream to, like, to make a movie, to make a feature film, like, if I was to hold on to this dream and do this, like, I would never see my family. And I decided I didn't want that. Like, I wanted to be able to see my family. I wanted to be able to see my kids, because it's like my mom was around when I was a kid, but my dad was always working. And so, like, he was never really there. And I realized that I don't want to be that for my kids. Like, I want to be there for my kids. And so at the end of 2016, I made the decision to get out of the film industry. And it was about the time that I started watching Bob. And I decided that that because I like to make stuff, no pun intended, and I have this experience, you know, filming and everything like that, why don't I just put the two together and kind of do what Bob does and start doing a YouTube channel, with the intention that that I would specifically do stuff that I can do with my kids, that as a family that we could do together. I make because I want to make stuff with my kids. Because even though my dad wasn't around a lot when I was a kid, like, the strongest memories that I have of him is building stuff together, building a fort in our backyard and building a shed. And when I was a teenager, he was restoring old houses from, like, the late 1800s, or early 1900s. And I would go and I'd help him, and because I was small and nimble. And so I was climbing up in the rafters and, you know, over beams and running wiring and pulling wiring, all this other kind of stuff. And, like, those are some of the strongest memories I have of my dad, is making stuff together. And so I want that for my kids. I want to be able to make stuff with them so that they have those memories going forward, so I can be there for them. And, you know, and the one thing about my dad is after we got done building the fort, he kind of, you know, we kind of had that moment where he stepped back after it was done. And he asked me, he's like, "Do you know why I teach you to build stuff?" And I was like, "Why?" He's like, "Because I want you to take pride in your work, so that at the end of it, when everything's done, you can step back and you can look at it and you can say, hey, I built that. I made that." And years down the road, like, you always have that to look back on. And you can say to yourself, hey, I built that. I made that. And it was a very poignant moment for me, even though I was probably a teenager and I was like, yeah, whatever, Dad. that moment has stuck with me because I realized, like, how true it is. I used to have a blog, like, several years ago, just making things with my daughter, because it was just her and I at the time. And we would make these, like, superhero capes, and we refinished a toy chest to look like the doors from Frozen. And so we painted it together and all this other kind of stuff. And she still has it, and she still looks at it and, like, hey, we made that. And it's like, yeah, yeah, we made that together. And she has that memory of it. And I think it's just amazing. And so that's why I do this. I make because I want to make memories for my kids. That was a very long-winded answer. I'm sorry.
That's a pretty good answer.
No, I think it's a good start to, you know, why that, and then now why the need for the rebranding and everything else.
Mm-hmm. I think the name is great, because the name does point back to with the workbench. It's like, all right, well, you're making something on a workbench. And then the once upon a workbench, it's whimsical. It's kind of fun. It could be anything. I mean, but it's going to be, it's not going, I think it's a really good mix of the beardless man, because I don't picture a big bellied bearded plaid, like, tool time type guy on a once upon a workbench. Like, it's fitting. I think it's really good.
Yeah.
It has to set up the perception.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not saying what's on the workbench, so you're not, like, necessarily pigeonholing yourself into, like, woodworking only. Even though, like, you know, Bob has, I like to make stuff, it's, like, as generic as you can get. there's still a large portion of the his audience that I feel that expect a certain material or a certain group of, you know, videos. Like, you can't do too much of a deep dive into Arduino because all the woodworking guys will be like, oh, this is a woodworking channel, blah, what, you know, whatever it really is in his mind. But I like how it's kind of open-ended and you can kind of explore different things. And if you want to mess with Raspberry Pi, you can do that because it's on a workbench. It's sort of all-encompassing and specific at the same time.
Yeah. And like with the tonal shift of my videos, I'm leaning into narrative watch me work videos. And so incorporating like storytelling and animation and cartoons and stuff like that. Kind of like, I don't know if you guys, we only had three channels, but we had channel 11, which showed the Wonderful World of Disney back in the day, where it was like a mix of live action and cartoons, all this other kind of stuff. And I really like that idea. Whether or not it's going to work out, whether or not it's going to pan out, I don't know yet. But I kind of want to lean into that and see where it takes me.
Yeah, I've had a lot of fun in some of my videos. It's not a consistent thing, but I like dabbling with animation and After Effects and things. So a lot of my videos have some sort of graphical element. You know, like the Thwomp video, I have like Duck Hunt dog jumping up and down, doing all these different things, and trying to use that, flex that muscle of animation just a little bit. I find it makes it, I enjoy the process at that stage. Because like a lot of times those project videos, that I'll have the project in mind, but when, all the little things I add at the end, like all the little animations, I don't think of those until the very end, just how my mind works. And then I'm like, oh, it's like a treasure chest I'm opening up. I'm like, oh, I could do this. And obviously you get into that infinite abyss of, oh, what can I do next thing, and you maybe never finish the video. But once you find that right balance of things, then you, at least personally, I find that really rewarding, and finding all the different little like nods and little like Easter eggs in a way for me, like someone that's really paying attention to this one moment, maybe they'll get something out of it that most people won't. And I think they, it's kind of like a reward for being a fan. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. So, going through this whole process, I actually messaged all of you to, to kind of get your input, before I made the decision. Cause I was kind of curious. And I talked to Wes about, you know, potential topic for tonight of in terms of rebranding, not only my experience, but if you guys were to rebrand, how would you do it? Like, what would you do? What do you like about your current brand? What don't you like? Kind of reflecting on the brands that you chose and the names that you chose to say, to kind of, to get your stories out of it.
I secured another name for my workshop because I was, I know we talked about it on here. Mm-hmm. When we moved into the fifth wheel, it was an opportunity for me to rebrand if I wanted to, because I didn't know kind of how long that was going to be. So I have all that still secured. I just don't use any of it. But yeah, my branding's not great, but then again, it doesn't really need to be, because I've all but given up on my YouTube channel, because I don't find the value in it. I was kind of like you. Like, I never made a dollar off YouTube. I was putting in a lot of work. It was a lot more work than the project itself demanded, which is what I cared about, and cared about, you know, the time spending, you know, with my kids building stuff. But it was never financially viable. And then with traveling, and it was like, I don't know what we're going to be, or how I can try to incorporate what we're doing with us going places. And then the PI workshop means something to me, but as a brand that is, it's not intrinsic. Like, a brand is you promoting what you have to the rest of the world. And I made it very intrinsic. It's about our stuff. And then I have to explain it to people when they ask, because they think it's about Pi. Or Wes found me because you thought I was a Raspberry Pi channel. Like, yeah, that's great. Yep.
Man, if I had known then what I know now.
Ugh. Right?
Jeez.
Dumped that guy a long time ago. But I don't know. There's no reason for me to want to rebrand, but yeah, I strongly considered it. And I can probably delete all those kind of other brands now because they don't make any sense. They were related to the fifth wheel, and it would have been a lot more appropriate. But now,
can you give out some of the names or what?
Yeah, it was the Fifth Wheel Workshop.
Oh.
It was pretty simple, but
this is where you go and you find like somebody on YouTube or somebody on Instagram that is living in a fifth wheel and has a workshop, but has a terrible, terrible brand name. And you say, hey, I got this great brand name that I'll sell you the rights to.
Chip Builds in the YouTube comments, she just put that she thought your real job was a private investigator, and that was a nod to that.
Oh, yeah. See?
Yeah. That's fine.
That would have actually been pretty cool, if that was the reason behind it.
I made my logo in Microsoft Word while I was at work, and then eventually converted it in SVG using Inkscape. But I don't know. It was so many random decisions. They were never as purposeful as they needed to be, and they were made in ignorance. And they came from a place of immaturity when trying to broadcast your brand out. It was very internal. All the decisions that I made were completely like self-centered. And then when it became part of the community and you needed to like put yourself out there and make stickers or t-shirts or mass produce your stuff for the world, like it was not an easy transition because I was proud of it and it made sense to all of us in my inner circle. So those were never good decisions, but I didn't have a sounding board and I didn't have the community to be able to vet those things through. I did it all on my own. So it all sounded like great ideas because I'm always going to agree with everything that I say. So I think, you know, your first step in asking other people that have experience with branding, good, bad, or indifferent, I think is a really mature step. Because like you said, you like your logo. It's something that you chose a long time ago. It means something to you and your intestinally and your... you know, it's on your heartstrings. And so to get rid of it, to change it, I'm sure there's a little trepidation behind that. Like you may not want to, but you may see the value in doing it. And that's a responsible move.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it took me from Maker Faire up until Monday to pull the strings. So, yeah.
I think Sean's branding. I really like Sean's branding. I know you talked about your logo and stuff. But just the name Geek Builders and Geeksmithing the same way. Like,
well, that's an issue with it too.
Okay. How so?
Because Wes and I get confused, or people confuse us all the time because our names are, they seem distinct to us because they mean something different to us, but they get, you know, people get confused all the time. I think Izzy actually called my channel Geeksmithing one time and vice versa.
Yeah.
And I wasn't going to correct.
Yeah, the Geek Pub is Geek Pub as well. Pub,
yeah.
There's a couple of them, yeah.
Geek is such a generic term.
I have to admit
term.
That I've fallen prey to that, too.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And I think that the content in our channels aren't, it's not identical, but I think we have some similarities in tone, possibly. So, but, you know, I could, you know, I think I'm in good company, at least. You know, at least it's not, you know, being confused with something that I don't want to be associated with. So I think that's a positive. I like my name for the most part, although Builder has very much a construction, kind of like suggestion to it, which is sometimes accurate. I've struggled with my logo since I created it, because I know it's not quite right from a graphic design standpoint, and the logic behind it was primarily off of using the primary or the near complementary colors of the blue and the, it's not quite orange, but it's that golden yellow. Just to get more attention. The circle logo, I think, is a little bit better design, but the sword and the hammer is a little bit generic. It's probably doesn't stand out as much as I'd like. So I think the branding can be improved, but I'm okay with the name. Although I've thought about changing it recently because I'm probably going to be doing less physical builds and then more digital stuff again. The geek part probably still applies, but I'm not sure if the builder does as much.
I think it does. I mean, if you're a programmer, you have to build the code to create the, I mean, there's still non-tangible definitions around it, but I agree. It's for the layperson, it would be more tangible. But
so, what would you rebrand it to kind of reflect what you're doing now?
I don't know. I've been so stuck on this name for three, probably almost 4 years now, that I really haven't been able to think too far beyond it. But it's mainly been more passing thoughts, as opposed to here's something I'm going to sit down and figure out. It's something I've considered. And when you were asking me those questions the other night, I have a parent company name, which Geek Builders kind of sits under. So I was thinking about just maybe going back to that original name, which is Ambient House Studio, which is something I've had since, God, I've owned that domain since 1998.
Wow.
As a parent company, just because we have so many different things that we do underneath it. We need one central, thing to put on the taxes.
This September marks the fourth year of Geeksmithing since I created it. Since we're kind of going back to the start and a lot of these stories, my brand name, let's see, I started the first time I was kind of committed to that was when I registered the domain name. That was the first thing I kind of set in stone digitally. And when I did that, I was at an after party in Winston-Salem hosted by Steve Ramsey. He had a Woodworking for Mere Mortals Mega Mimo meetup thing at some sports bar, I think on a roof in Winston-Salem. It went along with Woodworking in America in 2014. And I was on the fence about whether or not I wanted to go. I watched Steve and Bob at the time, and Steve said he was going to go to that. And it's only a couple hours from my house. And I was still kind of on the fence. And then I started, I think I messaged Bob to see if he was going to go. I had never met Bob in person. And then he said he was going to go. And he sort of, if I remember correctly, sort of, at least the way I interpreted it, he kind of like elbowed me to sort of say, like, come on, you should go. He didn't know me before. He didn't follow, to my knowledge, he didn't follow a lot of stuff that I did. Just a couple messages and stuff here and there. I think maybe he had like 20,000 followers at the time. I don't remember subscribers. I don't remember the exact number, but it was in the much lower than it is now. But I ended up going with that little prod that he gave me. I ended up going meeting him, and it was a lot of firsts, like Steve Carmichael, Izzy Swan, and a lot of the guys that we still talk to and high five when we see him in person. And that was like the moment where I was like, all right, let me give this a shot. And the name, as I've explained before, it comes from, it's like a nod to my grandfather, who was a gunsmith. And I had a lot of memories growing up where he had a workbench, and I would build Legos when he's beside me working on his stuff. And so it was a nod to gunsmithing and that memory of him. And then it's geek smithing because you're building geek things instead of building gun things. So, and as far as the visual part of it, I was kind of not really sure about the logo for a while, but I knew I wanted to have some sort of Nintendo reference without possibly infringing on stuff. And it probably skates that line, but I don't know. I'll wait till I get a letter telling me not to use it. But the Power Glove is, I left buttons out and some symbology off of it. And I'm sure Mattel doesn't really care about that trademark anymore, but we'll see. And the hammer is a reference to Donkey Kong, kind of Paper Mario sort of hammer. But it's a little bit different. And so far, I know they have passed my logo and information around Nintendo's email, internal emails. I've seen screenshots of my stuff from a person I know that works for them. And they're like, hey, look, your stuff's in the internal email, like when the Mario Kart nursery was kind of blowing up. And they didn't post anything. They didn't tweet anything about it. I was kind of bummed out. I'm like, oh, that was my one goal, is to have them like, hey, good job, or anything. And they're like, hey, I got this screenshot. Don't share it. I'm like, oh, that's better. Yeah, okay, that's cool. So that was my first, like, sort of recognition. And they didn't simulate her at that moment. So I'm okay for now. As far as, and that's the one, like, branding possible thing that I might need to change. when we're talking about revisiting is the logo, if that ever comes to an issue of using those graphical elements. But I don't think it's that big of a deal. We'll see.
I think your logo is a perfect fit for not just the name of the channel, but for you. It's, you know, it, of course, you know, Nintendo being at the core of the logo, but it just seems appropriate. Yeah.
And it's also like a blacksmithing kind of influence, if that wasn't obvious already. But I appreciate it. At least it's working so far, as far as identification and sort of getting the idea across. I don't know if there's any other connotations people get from it, if they assume that I do like things.
A flight patch.
That's what I like about it. You're right. That was another. There's a lot of little influences. It does look like a zapper, is what they would call it in the Navy. I'll go grab one here in a moment. But the placement of the name underneath at the bottom is symbolic of a squadron patch. Absolutely, it is. Thanks for pointing that out. I forgot about that. There's a lot of Easter eggs, right, in my own logo.
It's very cool.
So are you in the process of drawing up a new logo? Donovan. Oh, Donovan, sorry. Are you in the process of drawing up a new logo?
Yeah, I'm kind of at an impasse because I'm not entirely sure what to do. I thought about drawing up like a very Disney-fied logo with me at a workbench and, you know, have maybe like my Mjolnir mallet or the nightlight or like some amalgamation of some of the things that I've created in the past, you know, cartoon versions, but as the logo. And I kind of put it out on Instagram, and some people pointed out that it would be very intricate. Mm-hmm. And it would be hard to express that in like things like icons or thumbnails or anything like that. They're like, hey, it'd be good for a banner, like, you know, on your channel, that kind of thing. But you know, pointing to examples of you know, overly complicated icons, basically, like the little thumbnails of that you see on social media and whatnot. And if it's too intricate, it'll be too small. People won't be able to see it, and you'll be unrecognizable. And I follow other channels where they actually have recently changed their, you know, their thumbnails and whatnot, and they're very modern, they're very minimal, and it works really well for them. And so I'm thinking about doing some kind of modern minimal logo. But I'm not sure because that's not one of my strong points, and so I've spent a lot of time on Dribbble lately, trying to get ideas and trying to figure out what to do.
I think you could think about it two different ways, though, and I think that Bob had this at one point where the original stickers had, I like to make stuff written on the sticker, and then it had the orange splash or whatever you guys are referring to it as, the mark. Mm-hmm. But most of the time, just the marking out because of that familiarity. And even I have, in a sense, I have two different logos. I have the long rectangular one that has Geek Builders completely written out. But then I have a circle logo, which is essentially the same thing, but just says G and B instead of the words. So I don't think it's unreasonable to have an official formal logo, but then also a truncated one for all the badges for social media and everything else.
Yeah. One of the things that my daughter and I are doing is she's very much an artist. She loves to draw. And so her and I came up with this idea of making a kind of like a cartoon mascot for our new channel, for our new endeavor. That's going to be like a little sprite, like a little fairy. And we're going to name her Spark because she'll be our little spark of inspiration. And we're going to start drawing her into pictures and start trying to animate her and put her in movies and things like that. And I thought maybe of just having Spark be the icon, I guess you could say, for the social media, and then, you know, figure out something else out for like the actual logo. But that's something else we're playing around with. So
I used to, well, I had to design two flight patches and like a system or like a series of shirts. I had to come up with a logo for this last flight group that I was with. And it was the same thing. I was trying to come up with something that encompassed all of the things I had going in my head rather than something that represented them.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy was like, everything you're doing is too busy. Like, even though it fit within like a circle, like a flight patchy kind of, you know, geek smithing esque type circle. He's like, it needs to be clean and it needs to be simple. And I always go back to that whenever I have to do pretty much anything with design work, is that it needs to be a little smaller and it needs to be clean. And every time I'm trying to design something, I know automatically I'm going to put too much in it. And that kind of works for thumbnails and kind of avatar little bubbles, that it's the cleaner, the more recognizable, maybe not so obvious in how it ties in, because a lot of times your name will be next to it, like on Twitter or YouTube or whatever, like your channel name will be right there next to what it is that you're showing. Mm-hmm. So you don't necessarily need to spell it out. But
that is one of the challenges, though, is finding an icon, finding a logo or a brand or whatever, that when you pair it with the name, it makes sense.
Yeah.
And then once you have that association, people will see the icon and know, hey, I know what that is. Like, you know, for example, Bob's logo. If you had never seen his logo before, you wouldn't get it. But once you see the logo with I like to make stuff, and I'm assuming it's kind of Arduino boards, like the little circuits that
circuit
you draw.
Traces.
Yeah, that's, I mean, it makes sense. It fits is what I'm trying to get at. And so wanting to come up with some kind of representation for my new name that would fit.
Right.
Well, note that he didn't come up with that logo.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like...
Is that like a 99 designs?
No, not to that. Yeah, Forby made it. So he is a graphic designer. Like, that's his job, is to make stuff like that. Just to come up with logos, to take all of those things that he knows about a company, or sit down and give somebody a creative brief, and then take all those points and then make a boiled down, super condensed, simplified version of that. So, I mean, that's what he's trained to do. Not that Bob couldn't do it, but Forby did that, and that's his job.
Oh.
So it made, I guess.
See, which I've really gotten to the point where I think I want somebody else to do it, just because there's so much in my head. And there's so many ideas that I'm like, I don't know if I'd be able to nail anything down that would be good enough. It'd be good, but I mean, good enough.
I had an order set for a new logo through one of the services, and I had my finger above the mouse button to click to buy, and then I didn't do it. Just something didn't seem right about it.
Not really.
Well, I think it is like using Fiverr or one of those. Something I didn't trust about those services, although there's one called 99 Designs, which, yeah, I think is a little bit more reputable, but it's also a lot more expensive.
Yeah, I went there yesterday, actually, when I was just like, I need somebody else to do this. Like, I can't keep doing this, otherwise it'll never get done. And so I went to 99 Designs and actually went through the process of putting in the quote and everything like that. And then the price tag came up, and I was like, I couldn't do it.
So. We have some people in the community who you might be able to talk to that also do this for a living. I think Wes is going to mention this already. Who are you going to recommend?
Sarah from Wartooth Designs.
Same here. Yeah.
I mean, unless you have an affinity against, or not affinity, a distaste for potatoes and underwear, then maybe that's not your objective. Her artwork is. I think she'd do a good job.
I would recommend taking a look at her website, because I think her website is really reflective of her design style, which is amazing.
No, I know. I found out about her when you guys interviewed her on the podcast and started following her stuff. So
when I first read your new name, I mean, I was trying to think of all the things that pop in my head, you know, when I thought of it.
I think of a castle. Yeah,
obviously, castle, or like a storybook, or a fairy, or a godmother, the storybook thing with it opened.
Maybe a tower, a tower with a flag.
It's funny that you say that because somebody on Instagram actually took my little drawing and animated it to where it starts out of his book and it goes kind of like a little pop-up book. And it comes. Yeah, it was fantastic. I was like, he's like, I just thought you might like this. Make you smile today. I was like, that is amazing. Like, that's awesome. It was my crappy drawing. So, you know, it had its limitations.
Did they post it on their Instagram page? Like, can I see that? Or is it like a private message?
Yeah. He DM'd it to me and it's like, hey, check this out. So.
That's a cool, the book opening is a super cool idea.
I think of Princess Bride-ish kind of stuff. You know, like the grandfather opening the book, and then here's the story with all the characters and the adventures of building crap on a workbench.
Funny enough, King's Quest. I don't know if you guys have ever played that.
Yep, love that
but
game.
my son and I started playing King's Quest a couple of years ago, and it just blew my mind, mainly because I played the old King's Quest. So I really liked the game, but I played the new one, you know, that is narrated by Doc. What's his name? Christopher Lloyd. And like just the storytelling that they incorporate as you play the game and the humor. I was like,
the pop culture stuff. And
like, why I should do something like this, because this is the world that I used to inhabit. Like, this is the world that I love. Why don't I do something like this? And that game, like I said, ironically enough, was kind of the catalyst to spark all of this. Getting a little too excited. I'm sorry.
No,
that excitement is good and it's needed.
Yeah. Never ending story. Any of those things with a giant story, kind of epic book kind of stuff, iconography. Chris Marvin from the YouTube channel chat room says, how about a pop-up book that has a workbench coming out of it?
It's a pretty good idea, actually.
It is.
I see you hitting something with a hammer and a bunch of like sparkles or like really ornate looking, like dreamy sparkle things like come off when you hit it.
Yeah. I mean, I knew I did want to incorporate the mural near mallet, because more than anything that I've made, that one is the most viewed. I would say most recognizable, but yeah, it is the one that it's viewed the most.
See, but then you're putting something that you've already done in a logo rather than letting that logo represent what you could do in the future.
Yeah. This is why
a baseball card. Yeah, so. Exactly.
Yeah.
I was thinking about a nail through a storybook, but maybe that has the wrong image or the wrong suggestion, you know. She suggested.
I like a tool belt. Some tools on it, and then like a little wand or something sticking out.
Actually, the tool belt with some more fantastical elements hanging down might be interesting.
Yeah.
That kind of bridges there that was gap in both worlds.
There was a little cartoon that I drew of me in plaid and had like a tool belt with like with, you know, screwdrivers and hammers and whatnot, but it also had like fantastical stuff on it, and I was holding Thor's hammer up and, you know, lightning coming down off of it and all that kind of stuff. And yeah, I've thought about doing that too.
Could be a toolbox too. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And this is why it's so hard.
I know. All these are good ideas. It's terrible because of how many good ideas there are out there.
And okay, everybody listening, sketch your idea and send it to us here at Making Geeks, and we'll make sure that Donovan gets it. Or right. I think tag him on Instagram.
The storybook thing is a cool idea.
Yeah.
Have the book be the icon, and then put some text or put something on the book. But like that very ornate looking magical storybook that you're just waiting for that book to open up to tell you the story of Donovan and what you are doing. Like, you are in the chapters of this book. Mm-hmm. And on the cover of that book is some fancy text or a picture of a workbench or some like very basic leather boundy looking image. But that book,
it's enticing. Like, yeah.
That's what I want to open.
Disney Cinderella.
Like, I want to open that book because there's something cool in there. But what's on the front of that book?
Do you remember the opening scene in Beauty and the Beast where it starts with the stained glass?
Yeah.
Do like a stained glass logo.
Broken Antler Workshop in the chat room says a toolbox opening up like a storybook with like the beams coming out.
Henry Mills. Who is Henry Mills?
I don't know. Hello, Henry Mills.
Broken Antler Workshop was like, Donovan is Henry Mills. I wish I knew that reference. I don't get.
If only we had a way of looking that up.
I know.
Is that the kid from Princess Bride? Is that his name?
I don't think so.
Henry Mills.
Henry? Once Upon a Time, the TV show.
Yeah.
Nobody watches that show.
That's why I didn't know it, because
I've learned a lot about you, sir.
Okay, so rather than getting bogged down reading in the chat, has this been helpful at all?
Yeah, it has. I mean, one of the things that I love, not only about hanging out with you guys every week on these lives, mostly in the chat, is just the fact that, you know, having a sounding board helps immensely. Like, immensely. Just because most of the time, because my wife isn't into stuff like this, so I don't really talk about it with her. My kids are, you know, 4 and 6. Their input is creative, but not always helpful. I've gotten very many recommendations for ninjas and swords and like all that kind of stuff. But like just having somebody that's in this community, in this space, to be able to talk, you know, basically just to talk it out, so helpful. So yes, to answer your question. Again, long-winded. Yes. Yes, that is my answer.
What's everybody been geeking out about this week? Sean, you said you had something earlier you wanted to save.
Yes, the trailer for Into the Spider-Verse. It is the Sony animated Spider-Man film that I think that we wanted but didn't know that we wanted. I've watched the trailer 3 times with Mark, my son, and I love it. It actually makes me want to go back and start animating again for an actual job, not just to teach other kids how to do it. I think it looks phenomenal.
You're talking about the latest one, right?
I knew I wanted that.
Yeah.
Was the character that they showed in that one that wasn't in the previous one? I'm being vague just in case.
I only saw the first trailer, so I didn't want to watch the second one.
Well, then.
There's a newer one.
There's a newer one.
I've avoided it on
purpose. You probably don't want to watch it because you'll be way more surprised.
Perfect.
It's really cool. It makes me want to still watch it, but I sort of had like a, I wish I didn't know that character was in it. Don't watch it.
Okay.
I'm watching it right now.
Because there's a character that they show that I know what he's referenced from, but I don't know if it's referenced before what I know of. Anyways, I'll talk about it after.
It's only a trailer, but I'm really impressed with, and it isn't even just the animation. I'll just say that I'm impressed with the filmmaking, with everything.
That is a cool visual style.
Yes.
It kind of came out of left field, didn't it? Like, as far as like Sony Animation Studio kind of stuff, like especially compared to like DC Animated is already like this juggernaut that is hard to even go up against.
I think in the
movie kind of space, you know, not necessarily direct to DVD or something.
I think that they are setting a precedent for what future animated films really can be.
I blame Netflix, honestly. My kids and I have been watching a lot in Netflix lately, and like Hilda and the Dragon Prince, and just the animation quality that companies like Netflix are pumping out just constantly. I really think /hope is going to up, you know, established names game. Mm-hmm. And this is like Into the Spider-Verse. I love that style. That particular, it's not exactly cel shaded, but it's not. I just love the direction that they're going with it, especially with the new Spider-Man that came out in PS4 and like how good that one is, and just taking Spider-Man in the opposite direction that Sam Raimi took it, and I think it's a good thing.
Donovan, what are you geeking out about?
Hilda and the Dragon Prince. my kids and I watched both the first season of Hilda and the Dragon Prince, and which comes at a really great time because, you know, we're rebranding and we're doing all this. My kids and I are doing all this kind of stuff together. And I was like, wow, this is fantastic inspiration. And the storytelling is amazing and the animation is amazing. And it kind of makes me miss my Disney days, but it's just, yeah.
It's a Netflix?
Yeah, Netflix.
Okay. I've seen the icon or the thumbnail for it. I haven't clicked on it.
Mm-hmm.
I'll check that out. I am geeking out about something I purchased less than an hour ago. Well, less than an hour before I started the podcast, because I'm geeking out about the Spider-Verse thing. I don't want to, you know, take that away from you. You already kind of went into that. I picked up a HDMI streaming card, which will now allow me to hook up game systems to stream them on my Twitch channel.
Is that the Elgato?
Yes. I bit the bullet and got that one. I bought one earlier this week from Amazon that was a $70 model that looked a little sketchy, and surprise, it didn't work. The drivers were all junk, and it was clearly a rebranded item that was from East Korea, right? So it just didn't work at all. Tried it on my wife's computer, it didn't work. So now I've got an HDMI input. I tested it before we went on live here, and I got my Super NES Classic plugged into it, and it works. And so now I've got to order a HDMI or AV to HDMI adapter so I can plug in yellow, white, and red cables for like the old school stuff.
Oh,
like,
man.
NES, Super NES, N64. So I'll have not just my building stuff on Twitch. I'll actually kind of delve into something, you know, that's sort of like maybe I'll take a respite on every other day, or after working on something for a while, I'm not sure if there's a schedule or not, but I like playing old stuff and I need an excuse to play something. And Twitch seems like a good place to do that.
So now you're going to be working while you play games.
Exactly.
I need to work on that too.
I often guilt myself into not playing games. And I've done this since I started Geeksmithing, honestly. The first game that I played, like, with any sort of focus was Breath of the Wild. I allowed myself to play that game. Before that, like, I had bought, what was that one, the mech game that came out? Titanfall. I bought Titanfall 2 and I think the last Star Wars Battlefront game for PC. This was like over a year ago, I think, when I bought them. Never even downloaded and installed them. It was like a double pack. It was like $80 when they both were supposed to be like around $50. Like, oh, that's a good deal. Man. I bought them, never even installed them. And I feel ashamed that I'm even saying that. Because before, and it's not just Geeksmithing. I can't blame it entirely on that. When I worked at Epic, that kind of drummed the desire to play a lot of games out of me. Just because it was... What, you didn't know this?
No! You didn't worked at Epic? What?
Yeah, I worked at Epic Games for 3 years. I worked on Gears of War 3, Gears of War Judgment, Infinity Blade.
How? We never talked about this.
I don't know.
He's talked about it on the show several times.
I've worked at I worked on the Unreal Engine 3. yeah. So I had like 3 monitors in front of my face at all times there, and I think I did an 87-hour work week up against like 70-hour up. Like within 2 months, it was just like constant. And Samantha was born at that time, and it was just the Geeksmithing was like a purging of the digital creation. I wanted to do tangible creation, so I think I just
you guys can have a date and talk about this later.
That's
on.
Right.
Wow.
I'll show you my. I'll post,
you find out
tonight. I'll post my plaque that I got from Gears of War 3 after we completed it with my name on it. Anyways, that's what I'm geeking out about. It was a cute moment. Yeah.
All right, Josh, what are you geeking out about?
Daredevil trailer.
Which one? The actual trailer? The full trailer?
Full trailer.
Okay.
Season 3 trailer.
He needs a tissue.
What?
He needs a tissue. Every single trailer I saw, the little teasers, his nose was bloodied like every single time.
He's just
get a tissue.
That trailer is him speaking while just punching people. in random scenes, in random places, in random costumes. He fights himself at one point, which I think is a bullseye.
I'm glad they backed it up, or they made it come out sooner than they were expecting.
Yeah. We may or may not be making a Daredevil-related project that I had to engineer a piece of, and it finally worked, and I'm pretty stoked about it.
Cool.
Yeah, it was pretty neato. We have a working prototype of a cool black mask. I made it from the sleeve of an old t-shirt.
Oh, that's not the direction I thought you were going. I thought it was a Kingpin fat suit, but never mind.
Oh, well, that would have been better.
I don't need the suit. I just got it.
So, yeah, the Daredevil trailer looks pretty dope. Out of all the Netflix Marvel properties, just the one I've seemed to be able to watch. The other ones just don't hold my attention for one reason or another.
Punisher was close for me, but that's another discussion for another day. Like, I was able to stay focused on that more than the other ones, like you're saying.
Although I did fall asleep during the last Daredevil, like the season two finale. I fell asleep at the end, and I don't know what happened, so I have to go back and watch it, because Tiff won't tell me. She watched it, but she won't tell me because I
fell asleep. Have you seen Defenders?
I saw a little bit of the Defenders. Somebody wrote me an email.
You'd probably have to watch that first, at least for...
It said, I need to go back and watch the Defenders and give them another shot, because I poo-poo all over Iron Fist, and I'm indifferent for whatever reason toward Luke Cage and Jessica Jones. They're like, just go watch the Defenders. Get over yourself. So, yeah, the Daredevil looks pretty cool.
All right. Well, we'd love to hear from all of you. Go ahead and check out the website, makinggeeks.com. Go to the contact page, and there you could list any questions, suggestions you have for the show. And on the homepage of the site, you can listen to all of our past episodes, and be sure to check all of the past guests who we've had on the show, too. We've had some amazing people as guests on the show, including Donovan here. And I think this is, what, your third time on the show?
A three-peat.
Yeah, I think you have
I'm a three-peat.
I think you have the record now, or is it tied with Bob? I think it might be tied with Bob.
You did the two game shows, or is it just one game show?
No, still my favorite guest. You're my favorite guest. You brought something that we could play with. Everyone just talked about themselves.
I still have more of that if you guys ever want to play again.
We'll keep that for another time, I'm sure. So right there on MakingGeeks.com, be sure to check that out.
You can find us all over the social medias at maybe podcast, making podcast on Instagram.
Mark, where are you? We miss you. He usually does this part.
He's getting it down lately. He used to fumble over it a lot, but he's been pretty on
point. He's nailed it, for sure.
So as Instagram and Twitter, it's Making Geeks Podcast. Facebook is Making Geeks if you're still on Facebook. And then YouTube, Making Geeks or Making Geeks Podcast. We don't know. Just type in Making Geeks. There's no other ones, and you'll find who you want to find. Good gracious, it's the internet. We've got SEO.
What's the AOL keyword? And I'd like to thank our patrons over at patreon.com/makinggeeks for helping us keep this boat afloat. If you'd like to top our top patron, Mr. Seth Williams, you are more than welcome to do so, but he is the reigning champion of all time for supporting the show. But we like to also thank all of our current patrons. We do appreciate it. If you'd like to join this elite squad of peoples, head over to patreon.com/makinggeeks.
And if you want to get a hold of us individually, you can find all of Wes's work at Geeksmithing all over the internet. You can find Sean at Geek Builders. You can find me at the PI Workshop. You can find Mark at Asylum Designs. And Donovan, in this in-between stage, where can people get a hold of you, or where can they find what you will eventually, or you already are?
Once Upon a Workbench.
Cool name. Mm-hmm. So we're staying tuned for a logo.
Yep.
It's under construction. That's what your avatar is right now.
Right? Yes, it is. Under construction.
Which I thought was the Workbench Con logo. And I thought that they were like boasting all of your stuff. I thought that Workbench Con was just like singing your praises. I was like, dang, Donovan is killing it. I'm like, oh, wait a minute. That's him.
Yeah. Not quite.
Right on. So Once Upon a Workbench. So, man, thanks for hanging out with us. Thanks for coming on, as always.
With super short notice. That's the shortest notice I've ever given anybody, considering how much time you thought you had.
From like, from now on, I'm going to know it's Eastern, not Central.
Thanks, everybody, in the chat on our YouTube channel as well. We had a lot of interaction, which is really nice to have. Thanks, everybody, for keeping it going in there.
Well, from all of us to all of you, we hope you have a fantastic week.
Take care, folks.
See you guys.
We've heard stranger sounds.